Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
All right, Justin, it has been an interesting week. It's May 1st. Well, I guess you're listening to this on Friday, so it's May 3rd. But it's May.
Yeah.
We're in May already. 2024, we are third done with the year, and we're in May. What does May bring us?
Flowers? Mother's Day?
Well, yeah, April shower, May flowers. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. May does bring us flowers. Yeah, Mother's Day is around the corner. Don't forget your mothers and your wives who are mothers. And, you know, that's a big one. That's a big one. It sneaks up. Sneaks up.
It does.
And then it's here. So not this Sunday, but the next. It's Mother's Day. And then we got, you know, sports world, NBA playoffs. You know, NBA is not the biggest thing around here. But if you're interested in basketball, the NBA playoffs are amidst us. And then, yeah, just nicer weather. Summer's upon us. End of school. I know for me and my family, the kids, the end of school activities, it's like a full-time job managing end of school activities and all the programs and the field days and it's just a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So, but we're excited for summer upon us. Yeah. You guys do anything?
Yeah. No, same here. Excited. May is a slower month for us, thankfully. Good. Yeah, we'll be celebrating Mother's Day this year. Danielle is, I guess, will be 28 weeks at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, rocking and rolling.
That's great. Yeah, first Mother's Day celebration. That's cool. And then this is your year with year anniversary with Richard Young. So,
Richard Young.
Congrats. Yeah, I guess it's a good segue to say, you know, my name is Zach Albanese. I'm a certified financial planner. I've been with Richard Young Associates for over 3 years, been in the industry for about 5 years. And as I just said,
Yeah, that's right. And I'm Justin Folsom. I'm also a financial advisor here at the firm. Today, Zach, is my 1 year mark to the day.
To the day. Yeah. So you're listening to this Friday, but the day we're recording it is the to the day anniversary of Justin's 1 year. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Glad you're here.
Thank you, sir.
So we got a good show lined up for you today. The first article we're going to look at is from a blog from a analyst that I enjoy reading. He the blog's called A Wealth of Common Sense, and this one is entitled "The News Is Making You Miserable." So he just talks about the discrepancies between what the news reports and how people's personal sentiments are. It's an interesting read. And then Justin, what are you going to take us into?
Yeah, we're going to talk about inheriting IRAs and three mistakes that are common and that we hear a lot from clients as they try to navigate inheriting a retirement account from either a loved one or by another means. And three mistakes that you should look to avoid if you do inherit an IRA.
That's good. Yeah, it happens. And it'd be a good article to be familiar with. Well, good. We're happy that you are tuning in with us today. We are up exclusively every Friday, and you can listen to our podcast on your favorite podcast app. You can go to moneymd.net and tune in. Also, it's good advice to check out some previous podcasts. Maybe there's a specific topic you're interested in, and we cover topics all the time. We take questions, we take feedback from listeners so that we can do relevant and meaningful topics for you. So check those out to see if there's any that are applicable to you. And yeah, we love putting this out for you guys. So check us out, moneymd.net or on your favorite podcast app. With that being said, we are going to get started, and we're going to start with the financial fact of the week. So the financial fact is small businesses really do rule the roost. You know, we hear companies like Amazon and Google and Ford, from the U.S. Small Business Administration, it shows us that 33.3 million businesses in the U.S. qualify as a small business, which makes up 99.9% of the businesses in the U.S.
Wow.
And of those 33.3 million businesses, over 80% or 27.1 million are solely owned by their owners and have zero employees.
So entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And so there are several factors to being a small business, including number of employees and revenue per year. So obviously bigger companies like Walmart make up more from an employment standpoint. But when we think about businesses as an entity, it is interesting and helpful that to view that small businesses really do rule the U.S. market by a staggering amount, which is kind of cool that the people themselves, not as we think of them, corporations, are kind of running the country in terms of business, in terms of the amount. Yeah, 99.9% of businesses are small businesses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so really cool.
Very
cool
interesting fact. Financial fact for you to take with you. And with that, we're going to jump into our first article, which again is called The News is Making You Miserable. This is by Ben Carlson, who's the author of the blog A Wealth of Common Sense. And there was a recent poll in Michigan, which is his home state. Mm. So he was interested in this. And they asked people there. They asked what their thoughts on the state of the nation's economy today was. And so 35% of people described the economy as either excellent or good. 6% said excellent. 29% said good. While 65% of people described it as either not so good or poor. But when asked how they would describe their own personal financial situation, a majority of people, 61%, described their circumstances as excellent or good, while 38% described it as either not so good or poor. So the prevailing sentiment of this group is, I'm doing fine, but the economy stinks. So it's interesting. It's kind of a head scratcher.
Yeah. So we're looking at a graph here, and I'll start with this, Zach. The author points out that Michigan is not unique, so we're not picking on Michigan folks.
Right.
When you talk about the conflicted feelings that they may have, but Gallup has a poll that shows people in America are five times as satisfied with their own life than they are with the direction of the company or country. My apologies.
Yeah, we were just talking about companies.
Yeah, okay. Companies, country, same thing. So for the listeners, we're looking at a graph here. It's of American satisfaction with their personal lives. And then contrary to that, the direction of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And there's two lines. They're basically parallel to each other. And what we see here is that the top line is folks, opinions or satisfaction with the way things are going in their personal life. So you can think of that as a green line on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then below that, a parallel line shows the satisfaction with things going on in the U.S. And we see that they're not necessarily correlated. As a matter of fact, they're two separate parallel lines.
Yeah.
So one may think, the country is going down the drain, but, everything with me personally and with my family is coming up as roses.
Yeah.
Why do you think this is the larger sentiment? Some may ask.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't stop with the economics, there are further examples when it comes to this line of thinking. So, Zach, let's look into the education portion.
Yeah. So this also exists in education. So there's another graph here, very similar. People are satisfied with their own situation. They think their child's education is good, but they think the education system for the country is failing. And so, this isn't a new phenomenon, but it really does appear to be getting worse in many cases. Mm. Households have felt strongly about their own financial well-being throughout the challenging pandemic environment, but their views on the local and national economies have diverged considerably. And so people will look at their own situation and think it's pretty good.
Right.
Their local, they think it's a little less than good, but then the national economy, they think it's much worse than their situation. So really, what's going on here? And so I think overall, some of these sentiments are political, which you could guess,
That's
Republicans,
right.
They're more positive about the economy when there's a Republican president and more negative when there's a Democratic president in charge. And the same is true for Democrats, but in the reverse order, which is obvious.
Right.
Think people are a little bit, people are biased and that's okay. And we're biased creatures and we like the things we like. And surely the pandemic and the ensuing inflation starts driving down sentiment. That all makes sense. But I think there's this human nature element as well. People are predisposed to view the rest of the world in a negative light, even when they think more positively about themselves. But as the author argues here, he thinks the biggest reason is not just our internal perception, but actually that he thinks the news, based on the title of the article, is making people miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, Zach, what's that old saying? History repeats itself. History,
yeah, that is the old saying. Yeah, I mean, right.
Yeah, so if we read a history book or maybe 10,
yeah,
we know and we recognize the world has always been a mess. There have always been awful people. There have always been problems throughout the world. The difference is now, Zach, with social media and things like that, we're constantly reminded of them. So we now get more news in a single day than most people ever saw in their lifetime,
right,
just a few short centuries ago. It started with newspapers, then the radio. Now we have TVs. We've accelerated the process in recent decades through the internet, social media, smartphones. Our brains aren't hardwired to have this much information thrown at them. And it's not simply a case of information overload necessarily. It's the fact that so much of the information we see is negative.
Right.
And we see that in the news all the time. We talk to clients about this. But just knowing in general, bad stuff happened in the past at an alarming rate. The difference is our ancestors weren't inundated with alerts, 24/7 news, social media posts, all of these things that we're consumed with in our day-to-day lives. We're seeing a lot of the negative, even though there may not be more negative now than there was in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to note. I mean, right now, really, it is impossible to remain blissfully ignorant. It's easy to want to blame things like news organizations too, or social media posters for spreading all the negativity. But realistically, the reason they're spreading negativity is because that's what we want.
It sells.
A recent study looked at more than 370 million stories on the internet to determine how negative language can impact news consumption. And lo and behold, the more negative the headline, the more likely people are to click on the story, regardless of what the story is about. So you don't even have to sit through an entire story to be mad now. You can just read a headline or see a screen grab. And I think the truth is negativity drives the eyeballs.
That's right.
In his book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, Neil Postman wrote about what sells when it comes to the consumption of information. And this is from the book. It says, "For those who think I am guilty of hyperbole, I offer the following description of television news by Robert McNeil, executive editor and co-anchor of the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour. The idea, he writes, is to keep everything brief, not to strain the attention of anyone, but instead to provide constant stimulation through variety, novelty, action, and movement. You are required to pay attention to no concept, no character, and no problem for more than a few seconds at a time." And he goes on to say that the assumptions controlling a new show are that bite-sized is best, complexity must be avoided, nuances are dispensable, that qualifications impede the simple message, that visual stimulation is a substitute for thought, and that verbal precision is an anachronism. So it's worth pointing out, too, that this book by Postman was published in 1985.
Wow.
Things have only gotten worse, especially as you were mentioning with internet and social media.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty staggering.
Yeah, no doubt. And the sad part, Zach, is, you know, a lot of the negativity in the world is generally getting better over time. We see that from the graphs listed here. For the listeners, there's six graphs, and the categories are poverty, education, literacy, democracy, vaccinations, and then child mortality. And in all of these graphs, we see a basic ratio showing us that progress is being made. And just as human beings, unfortunately, long-term progress doesn't make for a clickable headline.
That's true.
People would rather read about the car crash than the family that makes it home safe at night. And we see that with the safety of cars and new medicines and different ways to invest. And so the basics of this article, you know, from Zach and I, is to say there are good things.
Yeah. And if you think about it too, this is from an author, Tim Wu. He wrote a book called The Attention Merchants. And if you think about it, I'll read the quote and then we can talk about it. But he says in his book, the only communications truly without influence are those that one learns to ignore or never hears at all. This is why it is only the disconnected rural dwellers or the urban poor who are truly immune to propaganda, while intellectuals who read everything, insist on having opinions, or if you put it in today's, you know, watch YouTube, watch TV, read the internet, have access to email, these people think they're immune to propaganda, but they're actually the easiest to manipulate, which I think is totally true. We read and consume so much. We try and stay informed about everything, but the people who are trying to stay informed about everything are actually the easiest ones to manipulate because they get caught up in this never-ending loop of doom scrolling, worried about everything, going to the earlier point that negativity really reigns supreme. So, you know, the author of the article, he's not suggesting we ignore humanity's problems. The internet is, I think, a net positive. It makes it easier to see all the bad stuff, but it also makes it more convenient to help needy causes. But the warning here, and especially when regard to finances and the things that we're concerned about here, is constantly watching the news doesn't fix anything. It just makes you more negative and depressed about the state of the world. And so his advice at the end, I think, is good advice. He said, go outside, exercise, play a sport, spend time with your family, watch a movie, read a book. And he says any of these activities are better for you than consuming the news. So I thought it was good. It was a good read to think about what does make you miserable. Our lives are I mean, if we think about it, our lives are really good. We have a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think you bring in, you know, good financial planning to that. And just be careful how much news you intake because they get paid to be negative. And that can affect you. So anyway, good read from Ben. Let's move on to the question of the week. And Justin, I got a question for you.
What's going on?
Should I lower my retirement contributions and put those contributions toward debt?
Well, Zach, like most things in finance, the answer isn't, you know, direct or straightforward.
It's not.
You know, on one hand, having non-mortgage related debt does tighten your budget and could create some cash flow issues. We're talking about outgoing payments like car payments, credit card payments, a boat, student loans, things like that. But in general, if you are in a season of paying off debt and need to lower your retirement contributions to do so and pay that debt off faster, it's generally an okay or good idea. But, and there's a huge asterisk here, Zach, you have to be disciplined in actually putting that extra money towards that debt. So, you know, it sounds good in practice, obviously, but what we see from some folks in just talking through this and paying off debt is that when they lower that retirement contribution, that extra cash never actually makes it to the debt. And so you're really hurting yourself on two ends rather than attacking that debt head on with the extra cash.
Yeah, one of the best things about retirement contributions is you don't have a chance to play with the money.
That's right.
You know, it's like it comes out of your paycheck. You have this paycheck. You budget with what you get in your checking account. And so I think it's easy to underestimate the power of that. Now, I think like you were saying with that, if you have it automatically come out, you don't look at it, you don't consider it. Yeah, I think it could be a good idea for sure. What do we got next? What's the next topic for us, sir?
Yeah, so second topic here, we're gonna talk about three mistakes that beneficiaries need to think about and avoid when inheriting an IRA. So this comes from David Ray. He's a financial planner. He writes for Forbes quite often. So, you know, we're going to get into the mistakes, Zach, to avoid during the inheritance process. But first, I want to talk to the listeners about the new rules with the SECURE Act and kind of put a definition to a stretch IRA before, you know, we dive into this. So a stretch IRA is basically a way to preserve the tax deferred status of an inherited IRA for most of your non-spousal beneficiaries, which in turn, the old rules, you know, pre-2020 allowed folks to just continue to pass along their assets generation to generation, in turn prolonging that tax bill for Uncle Sam. So the Secure Act comes in. It eliminated the stretch IRA for most people who are inheriting an IRA or a 401k. So now those beneficiaries who inherit the IRA will need to follow the 10-year rule, which can significantly, Zach, I know we see this all the time, it increases the income taxes due on your inheritance, obviously, because you're compressing it all the sure. way down into 10 years. And not to mention when and how much you must take out each year for their RMD or required minimum distribution. It's just some things to think about, and I wanted to put a definition to those before we get started. But with that, let's dive in. So the new inherited IRA required minimum distribution rules, and again, we'll just kind of go over these beforehand. So the good news is that stretch IRAs, what we described earlier, are still available for the spouse beneficiary. However, for most non-spouse beneficiaries, think about children or friends that are going to inherit the IRA. The stretch IRA option has been replaced with the 10-year rule. So this rule requires the IRA beneficiary to empty out the entire IRA balance by the end of the 10th year after the death of the person that has given away the IRA. The new rules apply to the IRA beneficiary who has received the inheritance in 2020 or later. So we'll talk a little bit about through this article mm-hmm. what happens for the folks that inherited before. So don't freak out if you did inherit before 2020. You can still follow the old stretch IRA rules. Following the old rules will allow you to make that RMD from the IRA over your lifetime. So spouses obviously are eligible for that, and there are other eligible designated beneficiaries. And again, we'll talk about that towards the end of the article, which allow for an exemption from the new rules and can still potentially benefit from that stretch IRA. So spouses inheriting an IRA can also often transfer to an inherited IRA. A lot of IRA and names going on here, Zach, so yeah. follow me here, into an IRA in their name alone. So we'll talk a little bit about that transfer
yeah,
yeah. as
well. So I think now that, you know, Justin, you laid the groundwork, I think it's important to ask the question, what kind of IRA beneficiary are you? So tax rules regarding your inherited IRA really will vary depending on what type of beneficiary you are. And most commonly, when the question to ask is, were you married to the deceased or not? And that's the big one, because the spouse gets benefits that other folks did not. So it's imperative that you really do recognize into which category of beneficiary do you fall into and what payout rule you must follow. For those receiving substantial amounts of money via IRAs or other retirement accounts, making mistakes with this process really can result in paying substantially more taxes than you expected or that is necessary for your inheritance. So here are the three categories of beneficiaries under the Secure Act. The first one is a non-designated beneficiary, or NDB. You can go around to your friends saying NDB.
Yeah, that's right.
They have no idea what you're talking about, but it means non-designated beneficiary. And so that's the eventual inheritor. The eventual inheritor will not be able to benefit from the stretch IRA that Justin mentioned. So if you're a non-designated beneficiary, you won't be able to do that. The next is non-eligible designated beneficiaries, or NEDBs. NEDBs are also not eligible to the stretch IRA, and they will be subject to the 10-year rule,
right?
Which is a new rule. And the last category is an eligible designated beneficiary. These are beneficiaries who are eligible to use the stretch IRA, which is kind of the most flexible category is the EDB.
Yeah, that's right.
EDB, we got the NDB, the NEDB, yep. and the EDBs.
A lot going on.
Yes.
But hang with us, folks. Laid the groundwork here. Now we're going to talk about some of the mistakes that people make as they inherit these IRAs. So mistake number one, Zach, is taking a lump sum distribution from the IRA that you inherit. So if you are, some would say, fortunate or unfortunate enough to inherit a large IRA, meaning obviously someone has passed away for you to receive this money, or any other retirement account, the value of the proactive tax planning can be a huge deal. The tax savings could be substantial, regardless of whether you can use the old stretch IRA rule or you have to go with the 10-year rule. So they lay an example here. So let's assume you will inherit a $2 million IRA. If you don't implement any tax planning strategies and withdraw that entire $2 million inheritance in a single lump sum, you will get battered by taxes.
Yeah.
That's a big tax bill, Zach.
That's big.
So depending on your income and marital status and several other factors, as much as 3/4 of the inheritance could end up in the top federal tax bracket, which we believe is going to eventually go up. But right now it's 37%.
Still high.
So spreading withdrawals from an inherited IRA over that 10-year period.
And that's just federal too. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So spreading that over the 10 years can help keep much of your inheritance taxation in a lower tax bracket over those years for both federal and state. Mistake number two, not understanding the options for spouses inheriting an IRA. So there are several options for spouses when you inherit an IRA. They can do a spousal rollover, which means moving the inherited IRA money into an IRA in their name. You can also do a stretch IRA, or you can follow the 10-year rule if you like. If the money isn't needed now, you may consider just doing a spousal rollover. If you need the IRA money to live off of today, so you need the income today, and you're under 59 and a half years old, there may be reasons to do a combination of a spousal rollover and the stretch IRA to go ahead and get that income.
Yeah, different, you know, certain different strategies can really help out. Mistake number three is mixing pre-2020 rules and Secure Act rules. So perhaps you inherited an IRA when your father passed. You assume the rules are the same now that your mother has just passed, but really this might not be the case. And it really depends on when you lost your parents. So pretty much everything related to tax law is not fun and it's complicated.
That's right.
But it's important to know it. So then you throw in new tax rules or changes and there, you know, it just leads to confusion. But really to understand it, there's pre-2020 IRA beneficiaries. So if you, I think the cutoff is, basically at the end of 2019.
Right.
There's pre-2020 IRA beneficiaries who are being told they're not eligible to benefit from a stretch IRA, which actually is not true. They can still use this option, and the Secure Act does not change their payout schedule. There are also post-2020 inheritors of IRAs who are mistakenly being told they are eligible to stretch their inherited IRAs when they are not eligible. So really, depending on your overall tax situation, this can mean making taxable withdrawals from your inherited IRA, which could result in higher taxation of your inheritance. So really, the wrong advice here could mean you find yourself on the wrong side of a painful IRS bill, which is like leaving the IRS a huge tip, which, listen, I like to tip. I like to tip people who do good jobs.
That's
like to tip waiters and waitresses if they do a good job. I don't like to tip the IRS.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, same here.
Yeah. So the biggest hurdle here, though, is people who don't realize they are eligible designated beneficiaries. You remember the terms before, the EDBs. This group of beneficiaries, really, they can still benefit from the stretch IRA regardless of when the deceased passed. So again, missing these distinctions could really lead you in the wrong withdrawal schedule, push you into higher income tax bracket, which we don't want you to do, and substantially increase your lifetime tax bills, which we don't want for you as well.
Yeah, we don't want that. And to end it here, Zach, let's just talk just a little bit about the eligible designated beneficiary, the EDB, as you like to call it.
Yeah, the EDBs.
Listen, these are always going to be actual people, okay?
Yeah.
So in plain English, a trust, a charity, an estate, a corporation, think of those. Those are not going to be eligible designated beneficiaries. So here's the list, if you're wondering at home what those are. So the first one is the retirement account owner's surviving spouse. So we have the spouse that's eligible.
Mm-hmm.
The retirement account owner's child with an asterisk who is less than 18 years
important.
Old. Third one here is a disabled individual. Fourth, a chronically ill individual. And lastly, any individual who is not more than 10 years younger than the deceased IRA owner. A lot of rules. A lot of rules here. So in most instances, the EDBs can withdraw from the inherited IRA based on their life expectancy, this list of five, and do not have to abide by the 10-year rule. So all in all, Zach, receiving an inheritance can be emotional. Obviously, it tends to be that someone, a dear, you know, loved one has passed away. Something stressful has happened in order for you to inherit this retirement account. So make sure to seek guidance from a financial advisor and a tax pro to help ensure you understand your options with that inherited IRA and have a plan, right, to minimize the taxes on that inheritance.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, good stuff to know. Save you some money in the long run. Just, just ask your advisor. Good stuff. Thank you for that, Justin.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to our prescription of the week, which is tips for building your generational wealth. So we think about generational wealth. Everybody wants generational wealth. And the easiest way and the expected way is to save, do good retirement planning, do good estate planning, good tax planning. And which is, I don't want to say it's easy because it does take a lot of work and planning and preparation, but it's the predetermined way, right? That's just the simple way. You just save, you invest, and you have a plan. That's good. But the thing I want to emphasize here is tips for building generational wealth is really in the softer things, the softer skills, the relationships you have with your heirs, whether they're your children or your nephews and nieces, grandchildren, the way you teach wisdom, the way you educate. These are the things that really do build generational wealth. I mean, there's so many stories that you can come up with of a family that has hundreds of millions of dollars and their heirs squander all of that and their name is nothing. You hear these stories of children just not having the same values. They don't preserve that. They don't continue the generational wealth on because of other softer skills, or they weren't taught how to think about money correctly. Yes, focus on the importance of building the plan, but that step is easier because it's more laid out. There's a formula for it. There's not really a formula to raising your children or your grandchildren well. It's harder, and so but there's an enormous amount of resources you can in investigate to make sure you're doing what you can. So the tips for building generational wealth is really invest in the lives of your heirs, whoever that might be, spend time with them, get to know them, teach them how you saved so well and prepared so well so that it can be true generational wealth and not just you handing them a large check when you pass. So that's prescription of the week, and it's good for anyone really to follow that. So, but that's our show, man. It was fun.
Yeah.
Fun digging in with you here. This has been this week's the May edition of Money MD, and we'll be here next week on moneymd.net, or again your favorite podcast prescription. Check out our website moneymd.net and send us your questions. Again, we love hearing your questions so we can talk about them as the question of the week. You can call us at Richard Young Associates at 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend ahead.
Material in this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.